silent lucidity. We love the fact that people love specific projects, and everyone's going to have a favorite, maybe some over another. And we're just expanding the body of work. You know, I think of Queensryche as a song in progress. You know, it's an unfinished work. It's in motion, and we haven't hit the chorus yet. But my dream is still alive. I'm gonna be the best I can.
This week in the studio, Queensryche co-founder Jeff Tate and Chris DeGarmo reconvene in the studio on the 30th anniversary of the multi-million seller masterpiece, Empire.
Jeff Tatum
and Chris DeGarmo in the studio for Queensryche's Empire.
Watching the internationally televised 1992 Grammy Awards to billions worldwide. There, performing live with a symphony orchestra conducted by the late maestro Michael Kamen, was Queensryche playing their Grammy-nominated song, Silent Lucidity. I couldn't help but note how far they'd come, how far rock had come, to be recognized in such a huge and prestigious way. It certainly didn't start out like that for guitarist and keyboard player Chris DeGarmo, guitarist Michael Wilton, singer, lyricist Jeff Tate, bassist Eddie Jackson, and drummer Scott Rockenfield. They started Queensryche with three things in common, basically. They were all poor musicians in the Seattle suburb of Bellevue, Washington. They all relied on all-you-can-eat Tuesdays for $1.50 at the local fish and chips restaurant. And each individual was looking for band members that were dedicated to making music a career. So I asked former Queensryche singer, songwriter Jeff Tate, when he really discovered his own voice.
Well, I think it was 1986. I think musically, the band was really experimenting on the Rage for Order album. And we were really pushing out some boundaries there. That's the beginning, I think, of, for me at least, of changing the way I looked at what I did. And I stopped thinking about technique. And again, it comes back to this getting out of the way thing. You know, I was really stopped really thinking about it, what I was doing, but more got into what the lyrics were all about and expressing the song, you know.
Interpretation
rather than
execution.
Execution, yeah, thanks. And I think that's just a maturity thing that, that musicians get to a point, you know, where they stop showing off and, you know, start getting down to interpreting the song. And that was the start at about 86, and I don't think I really have refined, you know, defined it yet. I'm still working on it. And, you know, some subject matter moves me more than others. When I met the different guys in the band and we started playing together, one thing I really respected about them was their focus and drive. They wanted to be musicians. You know, they weren't just playing around, you know, they weren't, you know, posing for the girls, that
really?
Kind of thing.
Yeah, really?
Really. I mean, everybody had a focus, you know. They were going to be masters of their instruments and, you know, they had the drive and everyone worked. You know, everybody had a job they worked at so they could invest in the band, you know, so they could have the equipment to play and always constant. It's been a constant musical chairs of instruments over the years. I know, and equipment, you know, but, you know, that's part of being a band. But that's one thing I really recognized is that everyone was very serious about being a musician.
Former Queensryche guitarist, songwriter, and band co-founder Chris DeGarmo.
I remember vividly August 5th, 1983, I walked into my supervisor at Providence Medical Center in Seattle and I said, I quit. And he smiled because he knew that the band, you know, he'd been really into the band and was so happy for me, I remember. But all of us, I remember that day for all of us when we got to go in. And really, it was the beginning of being able to, you know, focus all our energy on writing music. And it was the most amazing moment, I think, yet, you know, that's happened, that realization that we were going to be able to do this. You know, and we didn't know how long. There were no guarantees. There was nothing out there that said that we'd be here 15 years later, you know. No, but we didn't care because, you know, we just loved it so much. And it was just great. We never really thought, I guess, that we'd be here. We just kind of got out of the way.
Young man now.
The galloping leadoff song on Empire entitled Best I Can put the listener on notice that Queensryche's fourth album was bringing it this time. It was a decidedly different approach than Empire's predecessor, Operation Mindcrime, according to Chris DeGarmo.
I remember on that album, we came off of Mindcrime as very thematic, everything all tied together. And I remember us just kind of switching into this song mode. Mm-hmm. We just got into songs and not really the theme. Not because, I mean, we loved the theme. We're very proud of Mindcrime and loved what we did, but it was that shaking it up, like Jeff had mentioned, you know, wanting to go someplace else. And that's kind of where, you know, our heads were focusing on less is more. I remember us talking about less is more as we got into Empire, because I think Mindcrime was, it was an excess of a lot of things, but the right amount probably of those for that given project. But when we entered, you know, the Empire writing stage, it was, let's deconstruct, you know, this thing here.
But the singer and co-writer on both Operation Mindcrime and Empire, Jeff Tate, admits that not every Queensryche fan or music critic was prepared to let the band out of the heavy metal box.
You know, the box is, you know, their definition of you. They use to advertise what it is you do and explain what it is you do. But, you know, as a musician, as an artist, you tend to want to try to experiment with what you do. And therefore, the definitions of the box become different with each project, at least for us. I guess we sort of try to, you know, we recognize that we have to be sort of in this box in order to be sold, you know. But we try to give our box a different shape each time and sort of like push the boundaries of the box out, you know, with each project. And because we're, you know, we're musicians. We're not categorized by ourselves in any other terms than that. You know, we like music. We like all kinds of different music. And, you know, everything there is, you can find something in it that is appealing to you as a musician, I think. I think there is a segment, you know, of people that do, you know, latch onto something you do and that means something to them. And we recognize that, you know, something we've done is meaningful to somebody and that's great. And we don't ask them to replace what they find good about us. We just ask them to keep an open mind about what we're doing now.
Well, we're the sum total of all of our offerings, really. You know, it's, we love the fact that people love specific projects, and everyone's going to have a favorite, maybe some over another, and we're just expanding the body of work. You know, I think of Queensryche as a song in progress. You know, it's an unfinished work.
And you're always there. Every time I cry your name at night, you pull close and say it's alright. I look in your eyes just like the rain, washing me red, wash over me. Touching your face, I feel the heat of your heartbeat echoing in my head like a scream. Time to take away.
list grows longer every day. Fortunes are lost on the women I've seen, but without you
City Woman from Queensryche's 1990 Empire album alludes to the Boeing Aircraft Corporation in the band's Seattle hometown. Empire's lack of a rock opera theme allowed a much more flexible stage show, unlike Operation Mindcrime, according to Jeff Tate and Chris DeGarmo.
Yeah, well, it's very structured. Yeah, and to tour with that sort of thing, it's a challenge because it keeps you in a schedule, you know, that sometimes is can get a bit tedious. And but it's a fun medium to explore. You know, you can really let your imagination run wild. And it's nice that we've sort of noticed that, you know, we've flip-flopped back and worked on theme albums and then worked on sort of more song-oriented albums. And
this one, we really took the House of Cards concept, I think, yeah. I think even further, you know. To some degree, Empire was our first exploration into the kind of less is more theory, but we were bringing that House of Cards right down to, you know, its core, you know, really the foundation, where if you just pulled another card, it would fall in, but just enough cards in the composition there, you know, everything has a point, everything has a purpose, and if it doesn't have a purpose, it shouldn't be there, you know. And it really has been I don't know if it's a refinement or an ongoing sort of chase of, you know, writing a song is a wonderfully open-ended possibility. You know, it can really be anything, but it's often fun to see how little it can take, you know, to hold something together, you know. And it's interesting, but, you know, some of the best songs, you can just sit and just sing the melody all by itself, or just with a guitar or something, and the song, all of the rest of it appears. It's like in your imagination, the whole rest of the track is there, but all it takes is this little framework, you know. So then we thought, well, you know, let's write songs like that.
A case in point is the melancholy song on Empire entitled Della Brown. Composer Jeff Tate reveals the true story.
I used to live on my boat. When I first got my first royalty check, I bought a sailboat. And I lived on it and wrote all the lyrics that I wrote for Empire while living on that boat. And Della Brown was a homeless lady that lived near where my boat was moored. I'd see her every day on my way to rehearsal and sort of watched her situation and sort of became interested in the whole homeless situation, really. You know, sort of investigated it, read about it. And the song, just the lyrics came from that.
You got a cardboard house. You live the whole time. You keep your memories tied with string. The face that many once adored. 20 years gone, maybe more. Somewhere you lost what you dreamed. Lost your every move, but now you're all alone. Yeah, she's been gone for a while. Daddy left some time ago. 50 years passed too slow. He's the only one can make you smile. Them right. But living on the streets ain't bad. Well, sad people make you glad. Pardon me, could you spare some change?
Queensryche performed Della Brown on MTV Unplugged in April 1992.
And there's no, I mean, it was, there's so few effects on this album is the least, I mean, we're naked, you know, to some degree on this thing. And
uncomfortably naked sometimes.
It was a real, you know, interesting excursion into minimalism, you know, but ultimately it is revealing in some way too, that is really wonderful. You know, I think we can be us, you know, with just this, and we don't need all this other stuff. But, you know, we enjoy doing other things like that. But it's also really nice to explore, you know, just the basic basic structure of a song.
When we come back, former guitar-songwriter Chris DeGarmo and singer-songwriter Jeff Tate explain exploring the dream state to unlock Queensryche's biggest song. I'm Redbeard in the studio for the anniversary of Queensryche's 3 million seller, Empire.
Hey, this is Jeff Tate.
And Chris DeGarmo in the studio for Queensryche's Empire with Redbeard.
Thank you both. If there ever was any question as to the source of Queensryche's long history of success with a loyal fan base, you need only listen to band co-founder Chris DeGarmo's personal philosophy.
Your destiny lies within yourself, you know. It's your imagination that limits you, you know. It's your, you know, social conditioning puts up a lot of expectations and pressures and things, and, you know, this free thinking idea that is talked about there in a perseverance is something that threads really through much of our material across the years. And we just enjoy writing about it so much. You know, it's such a fascinating idea to explore the possibilities. And we just need to, you know, explore different things as we see them, as life is happening to us. That's all we can do with our music. That's what we want to do, you know, is just be a sponge for life and just try and present it in the form of songs that are meaningful to us. And we're going to come through a lot of different, you know, life is full of a lot of twists and turns and ups and downs, and it's a fluid, you know, the whole thing is. And so I think our work represents that too, you know. It's a lot of different colors and shapes, and you know, there's going to be some appeal to someone else, maybe in where they're at in their life coincides with what we're talking about at a given time. I think the industry places so much emphasis on trend, and you know, I mean, Jeff and I grew up in an era when albums, I mean, you know, when we first got together young and we're talking, I mean, we were sharing albums that we love. It's, oh man, I love this album, I love this album. It was albums, it wasn't singles, it wasn't this particular song. We were into bands that had this body of work and this great, you know, fantastic, you know, it was like a movement type thing, you know. And it's just, you know, it's really changed over the years. I think there are really fewer groups now that have a body, you know, of work, and those that do, you know, people, you know, U2 is an example of a band that has a body of work, you know, a fabulous body of work, and you can pick one or, you know, multiple spots you want to drop in on and say those are faves. And I think the industry is guilty of trying to you know, make the music balance their fiscal books or something, you know. It's like, and I think that's just because of the age we live in now, but I really hope, we want to make a killer album, and I think we've done that. And our fans, you know, they're not just gonna find one or two tunes, they're gonna find an album from Queensryche.
Leave me one more last word today. You be nice for a while. But now I'm out.
Another Rainy Night comes from Queensryche's fall 1990 masterpiece, Empire, an album that elevated singer Jeff Tate into the upper echelon of rock vocalists, something Queensryche co-founder Chris DeGarmo knew instantly the first time he heard Jeff.
I remember when I first saw Jeff sing in another band, and I thought to myself, I said, I got to work with this guy, you know? I just said, I really think, I felt inside like we could do something, and I felt, you know, about the other guys in the band, I felt, you know, we had a very nice chemistry together, and that Jeff would complement that really nicely. We tried to make it as easy on Jeff as possible to lure him, you know, along into the situation, you know, and every instrumentalist, and I think, you know, a vocalist is an instrumentalist. It's just using, obviously it's a different instrument, but technique can inspire imagination. Or imagination can inspire technique. And I think as you begin as a musician, technique drives the imagination because you need to learn the instrument. You have to get a grasp of it. And it's the same thing with your voice. You know, you're experimenting. You're finding out what it can do along with the influences of what, you know, when you're young, you're very, you know, susceptible to peer pressure and what people think is cool and stuff. And at some point, you know, that sense of self emerges. and that sense of identity. And I think, as Jeff said, you know, it really started happening around 86 when it was, when it just started being a not worrying about what other people were doing, and not even worrying about really what he was doing, just kind of trusting his voice to interpret it, you know.
Thunderous performance on Queensryche's 1990 Empire album. is in stark contrast to the unconventional worldwide hit which emerged from Empire called Silent Lucidity, composed by guitarist Chris DeGarmo and brilliantly arranged by the late maestro Michael Kamen. Here's Chris.
I wanted Jeff's voice to be right up on the listener's ear. You know, I wanted that kind of intimacy, and Kamen interpreted it so beautifully. You know, I was describing the French horns and, you know, the flavors and the textures of the sound, and he just knew. He knew exactly. We sent him a tape of it, and he said, I know, you know, I know. And God, I remember when all of us, Michael had done the orchestration, you know, and had finished it, and we sat, minus the track, minus the vocals, minus the guitar, minus everything, and just listened to this 65-piece orchestra play their performance on Lucidity. It was so moving. It was absolutely stunning. It was amazing. I still have a DAT of just the orchestra. It's so beautiful. I mean, it was really wonderful. Michael Kamen's he's a genius.
Hush now, don't you cry. Wipe away the teardrop from your eye. You're lying safe in bed. It was all a bad dream spinning in your head. Your mind tricked you to feel the pain. Someone close to you leaving the game of life. So here it is, another chance. Wide awake, you face the day. Your dream is over, or has it just begun? There's a place I like to hide, a doorway that I've run through in the night. Relax, child, you were there, but only didn't realize when you were scared. It's a place where you fears, trace the years and light the way to your mind. Commanding in another world, suddenly you hear and see this magic new dimension. With you, won't you know?
next to you.
Queensryche's Silent Lucidity stunned everybody, becoming a top 10 hit on Billboard sales, nominated for Best Rock Song at the Grammy Awards, at which they performed it live on the telecast, and winning MTV's Viewer Choice Video Award for 1991. Here's composer Chris DeGarmo with singer Jeff Tate.
You know, it was inspired by some experimenting with, you know, dreaming that really just, I had suddenly started becoming aware of when I was dreaming, and really got very into recognizing the dream state and manipulating the dream state. And it very much was happening by accident. I'd always had a very strong dream recall, but I had stumbled into starting to recognize that I was dreaming and being able to maneuver and operate in that, and that was the launch, really, of the lyrical idea of what that song talked about. I didn't, you know, trying to do all the elaborate strings and stuff. It was just more of a communication thing. It was a very simple thing, and came in and said, you know, this is more than this. It's going to be bigger than this. But here is the framework, and it was also a less is more excursion, challenging for Scott.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going against the grain quite a bit, you know, trying to get Scott to, you know, play less.
And me too. I had a hard time with it. Remember, it took me several times to, I remember one day trying to go at it, you know, for what, 5 or 6 times, you know, takes on it, and just couldn't do it. And we quit and went out to dinner and relaxed. And then after dinner, I nailed it, but it took a while to get into the headspace.
Yeah.
By my watering eye, hand on heart, a promise.
Hand on Heart just shows how deep Queensryche's Empire album actually was. Chris DeGarmo left the band he founded to pilot corporate jets, while Jeff Tate heads his own band, Operation Mindcrime. But when they were both in Queensryche, they made sure to give their loyal fans some memorable times.
We really try and involve the fans on our last tour, where in each city, you know, the fans could come up and actually be part of the show. We had this scene called The Void, and it was a period in the show where we played the title track of the last album, and the sets changed, and it was this bar, and it was all animated. The screens were showing this giant bar, and all these tables and chairs were set up. And in each city, we had you know, fans that had participated in contests and things that, you know, could they won their chance to come up and hang out with us on stage. And there really weren't any rules. They could just be part of it. It was just, you know, hey, this, we've created this thing. It's a bar as part of the show. And we had all kinds of people. I don't know how many it was by the time we finished the whole tour. But, you know, and we'd hang out. We were playing this. And a lot of them, you know, it was pretty trippy for them because they were up on stage in a place with 14,000 people, you know, looking out. And, you know, it was unnerving for some of them. And many of them took the opportunity to exhibit their own fortes and talents.
But it became sort of, you know, people would do their own sort of performance art pieces during this thing. There were animal tricks, and, you know, they were, you know, it was a thespian sort of endeavor, really.
Yes. It was entertaining for us, you know.
It was different every night.
But back to the point, you know, the fans were actually part of the show. Our fans are the extended family. I mean, they are the reason that we can do this, you know, and we love doing it. We just love writing music, but it's such a great, you know, compliment that these people, you know, enjoy what it is that we do and allow us to continue doing it.
Jump my now in a 5 and 10.
Queensryche live in London at the Hammersmith Odeon on November 15, 1990. I'm Redbeard. Thanks to In the Studio's guests today, Chris DeGarmo and Jeff Tate. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net.